everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I must live in the cold zone of the Tucson area, because there was a thin sheet of ice on the bird bath this morning, even though the airport, I think, did not record freezing temperatures. I think it was like 34 maybe for the official low.
So are you in an elevated area, or are you in a little sink area where cold air kind of collects?
I think it's the latter of that. Yeah, where it little low lying area that tack a couple of extra.
So we don't have any cold air coagulating. We just have it collecting.
Nope, we don't. It's Wednesday, September. No, it's Wednesday, January 15th, 2025, in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio at the Bustos Media Center. We're in central Tucson. We've got five radio stations here under one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. First week of January, we began our 15th year with the radio program and our 37th year in Tucson radio and television. Have our worldwide live listening, our podcasts all available at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Let's utilize the live line right off the bat today with the Buckmaster Show contributor on health. That is Dr. Victoria Mazes, the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is a professor of medicine and public health, internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine. Dr. Mazes is committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system challenges. Together with her team at the center, she created and implemented educational programs that have trained thousands of physicians, nurses, and other health professionals and impacted the care of millions of people. A highly sought-after speaker, she's the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and the author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. She co-hosts with Dr. Andrew Weil the popular podcast Body of Wonder, and she was named one of the world's 25 intelligent optimists. We need more optimists, that's for sure, by Ode Magazine. You can follow her on her website at integrativemedicine@arizona.edu and follow her on Twitter at Dr. Mazes. Dr. Mazes, Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to you as well, Bill.
We'll be talking a little bit during our segments with you today about particular goals. I'll share a few that I have set, but I want to begin with kind of the breaking health news. We heard a little tidbit of this on the CBS Network News that preceded the show today, that the Food and Drug Administration, Dr. Mazes, made it official today, banning the use of red dye number 3, the artificial dye. What is that specifically, Dr. Mazes?
Well, it's what it sounds like. It's a dye. It's a synthetic dye that turns both food and drinks into a bright cherry red color. The problem with it is that it's been linked to cancer in animals, and there's some evidence that it can worsen behavioral issues like attention deficit disorder in children. I don't know that we should be having any kind of synthetic dyes in our food. There's lots of evidence for lots of problems. Red dye number 3 is outlawed in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, California, and New York. Had state laws that outlawed it a year ago. And there are substitutes. You know, we don't have to use a synthetic dye. We can turn things red by using beet juice. There are pigments in some foods that we could use, like red cabbage, radishes, sweet potatoes. So there are much healthier, less worrisome ways to give food their color when we're trying to do that.
And it's all over the place. The dye is still used in thousands of foods, including a lot of candy, cereals, cherries in fruit cocktails and strawberry flavored milkshakes, and on it goes. And you do have to wonder, why in the world are we doing this when there are these natural alternatives, and our country is lagging behind when it comes to making that change?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I mean, some of it is probably complacency. Red dye number 3 was actually approved for use in foods back in 1907.
What?
So almost 120 years ago. Yeah, a long, long time ago. And so, you know, it's been in our food system. Manufacturers, you know, they have whatever, you know, colorful cherries in fruit cocktail, or as you said, milkshakes, strawberry milkshakes. People are used to them being a certain color. But we actually have known for a long time, and this is so interesting, more than 30 years ago, the FDA refused to allow red dye number 3 in cosmetics and also in topical medicines, because they already, more than 30 years ago, had data that it caused cancer when it was eaten by rats. So they said no in cosmetics, but they allowed it to continue in food. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, and this is not the change here. The FDA made the decision today, but the implementation is going to be a little bit down the road, isn't it?
That's correct. You know, almost always when these policies are made, companies are given time. And, you know, you have to say that makes sense. People can't necessarily change their formulations on the drop of a dime. But in this case, they have until January 15th, 2027. So they have 2 full years to reformulate. I'm hoping it's a little faster. You know, when California, which is such a huge marketplace, New York, such a big marketplace, has a law that says you can't sell that dye, you know, you can't add that to foodstuffs that are being sold in our state, that is an incentive already. So hopefully they're already working on getting this artificial color out of the food supply.
Is there something very easy that a consumer could do by looking at the ingredients? Will it say that it does have this particular dye listed on the ingredients?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it will always say, but I think often when you look at ingredients, it does include dyes as one of the things that's there. But just in general, that's such good advice that you're giving consumers as you make your food choices. Looking at the label, there are a lot of additives. There are a lot of what we call colorants. This, of course, is a colorant. There are a lot of preservatives that we're discovering have adverse health effects. And you and I in the past have talked about the concept of ultra-processed food. Mm-hmm. And ultra-processed food has a lot of health risks, including making us, as a nation, obese, increasing our risk of diabetes, increasing our risk of heart disease, increasing our risk of depression. So reading those labels and buying cleaner products, of course, if you buy a piece of fruit off the shelf, if you buy a vegetable off the shelf, those shouldn't have any of these dyes or colorants in them. But it's more in the canned and packaged foods that you find them.
All right. Any, do you want to transition here, or any final thoughts about the artificial dye?
Well, I'm glad that, you know, this rule has been passed by the FDA. You know, they say better late than never, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's taken them a really long time, but I think we need to consider it progress. And, you know, this is one more step to making our food supply safer and healthier.
All right. Why don't we pause here? Let's take the break a minute early so we can then transition to our next topic with Dr. Victoria Mazes, and that will be about goals. I like to call them goals, Dr. Mazes. When you say resolutions, those seem to fall by the wayside.
Yes,
yeah.
I like goals too.
Yeah, so
we treat goals differently than resolutions.
Yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit about my goals, and we'll talk a little bit bit about joy versus happiness and some other interesting things with Dr. Victoria Mazes right after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios at the Bustos Media Center here in central Tucson. And once a month, we are always honored to have Dr. Victoria Mazes, our contributor on health, with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Mazes, the founding executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. So this is the, Dr. Mazes, this is the time, couple of weeks now into the new year, and probably for the vast majority of people who make those New Year's resolutions, most of them have fallen by the wayside. Would you agree with that?
Yes, sadly, most resolutions are not kept. I mean, I think people make them with good intention, but they don't necessarily put into place what would need to be put into place for enduring habit change. And we're learning more and more about habit change. So I'm happy to talk a little bit about, you know, what are the things that actually make it more likely that that resolution, as you said earlier, that goal is going to stick.
Yeah, and I just wanted to share with my listeners a couple of the goals that I think are doable. And these are goals. Nothing, you know, if you miss out one day, it's not going to be the end of the world. But at the top of the list, Dr. Mazes, stay healthy. That's my number one goal. Try to live in the present, and then find a sliver of joy in every day.
How beautiful.
And that's what I would like to begin with, that word joy. And happiness and joy are a little bit different, aren't they?
They are different. I want to say, people do attribute some really significant differences, and I think that they're worth contemplating whether you fully agree with these or whether you have a different way of holding it. But often people attribute differences in where that feeling originates. So joy is often thought to come from within, whereas happiness might be more from an external source or a situation. Joy is more often linked to something really important that gets fulfilled. It may be spiritual, it may be emotional, and it sometimes comes independent of external circumstance. You could have something really difficult in your life and still feel joy. It's seen different. It also is sometimes seen as more enduring and less dependent on changing conditions. It's sometimes described in more profound and transcendent ways, as opposed to happiness, which is sometimes a bit lighter, a bit more superficial. It could be, something rather simple, like you hear a good joke and you laugh and you feel mm-hmm. happy, as mm-hmm. opposed to that deeper sense of fulfillment or awe.
Do you believe, and is there some research to show that joy does trigger maybe a series of changes in our bodies?
Yeah, I think this is so interesting. And again, it probably is one of the things that differentiates it from happiness. But mm-hmm. when joy has been studied, it has been shown to lead to psychological changes and physical changes that can improve our health. So, for example, when we feel joy, often our breathing gets faster, our heartbeat gets faster, our body may feel warmer, and these sensations are because we are releasing adrenaline, and that prepares our body to move, to engage, to take on whatever life is directing towards us. And it's also associated with improved mood. And as the research on joy continues to be done, they also are studying the brain, where we have the release of different kinds of neurotransmitters, these chemicals, dopamine, for example, serotonin, endorphins, and also parts of the brain that are related to pleasure light up when people are studied in an fMRI machine.
Do you think it could be genetic?
Well, some of the research suggests that our capacity for joy is partly genetic, and probably most of us have experienced this, that, we know people who just always see the bright side, who always seem to have this sense of equanimity, who have just an ease of experiencing joy. Having said that, it is definitely something that all of us can experience, whether we're genetically predisposed or not. And it aligns with some of what you described as some of your goals. So, we can set ourselves up to experience more joy.
And it's not rocket science to figure out what some of those pathways to joy would be. And maybe at the top of a lot of people's list, enjoying a meal with another person.
Absolutely. There is research to support that when we share food with others, sitting down in the company of others, we can have a sense of joy. I love really thinking about the derivation mm-hmm. of the word companion, mm-hmm. companion, our company. If you literally look at it, it's someone we share pan with or bread with. mm-hmm. So we know that companionship is, and eating together is one of the things that brings us joy. But I'd love to just have listeners consider for a moment, what brings you joy. Mm-hmm. It's good to know those things. Like, for example, I know for myself, dancing brings me joy. So one of my goals every year is more dancing. And, you know, for a number of years, I've been taking a dance class so that that goal actually manifests. It's not just, you know, a resolution that the next year I go, well, I never did that. Mm-hmm. But when I sign up for dance classes, it means I'm going to dance. I have children and grandchildren. It gives me joy to spend time with them. Being in nature and hiking, spending time at the ocean gives me a sense of joy. So knowing some of these things that bring me that sense lead me then to prioritize those kinds of activities.
And physical activities, and I guess you could, a lot of folks find joy in yoga.
Absolutely. Yoga, walking, running, also sometimes more when you do it together with someone else. Sometimes when you set a goal for yourself, one of my friends set a goal to ride his bike up the, it's called the Drive to the Sun. It's in Glacier National Park. It's a very steep, difficult bike ride. And when he accomplished that, he felt great joy. So, you know, is there something you've been aspiring to do? And, you know, it doesn't have to be insanely hard, like hiking up Mount Kilimanjaro. It could be training for a half marathon or walking to the top of Mount Lemmon or whatever it is. Accomplishing that goal can often lead to a sense of joy.
A lot of people enjoy journaling and writing, perhaps on a daily basis.
Yes, and there was a study in which people were asked to spend 20 minutes a day writing about positive experiences. This could be the joy of seeing a family member return home. It could be watching your child walk for the first time. And people who did this experienced enhanced mood for 3 full months than folks who just wrote about more neutral topics. They also went to the doctor less. They were feeling healthier. So when we write about these things, we organize them in our minds. We sometimes gain insights. Maybe we commit to doing an activity that has brought us joy more often. And we dwell in it and therefore heighten the experience.
So what are some ways that we can perhaps ensure that the goals stick around more than a week or two?
Yeah, it's such a good question. You know, the first thing I always like to say to the people who come and see me as patients is, you know, go easy on yourself, because we all set up certain goals and then something happens. You know, we have a vacation that derails us. We have a death in our family. We have something wonderful like, you know, a wedding, and we get derailed. So it's okay if we get derailed. That's human. The question is, how long does it take for you to recommit and resume, you know, and restart? Some of the new research suggests that we should start small. People sometimes start with really, really big goals. You know, I'm going to hike 4 miles every day. And then, you know, they don't get their 4 miles or their 10,000 steps and they give up. But B.J. Fogg, who wrote a really wonderful book called Tiny Habits, he's a Stanford researcher. He says, start with the smallest, easier behavior. So maybe it's a 1 minute walk. It's hard to fail at a 1 minute walk. You know, maybe it's one push up or one yoga pose, the smallest, easiest thing that you could do. And then another recommendation that comes from the psychology research literature is do something called habit stacking. So, for example, most of us are really good at brushing our teeth every day. I mean, most of us have figured out how to turn that into a habit. Well, if you place your new habit next to an existing habit, that makes it stronger. So, for example, some years ago when I learned the importance of early morning sunlight, I said to myself, well, while I brew my cup of coffee, I'm going to go outside and be in the sun. And so that stacks the habit. Since I drink that cup of coffee every morning, adding this new step of going outside and exposing myself to sunlight is an example of habit stacking. And so can you stack your habits with one that already exists so that it's easier? I know we don't have that much time, but one other thing I'm going to say is make yourself accountable to somebody else. You know, make the commitment out loud to someone else so that, you know, maybe they check in with you every day. You know, did you take that 1 minute walk? Were you able to do the one push up? Did you go outside and expose yourself to sunlight? Or make yourself accountable by doing it with someone else. I have lots of people in my life who commit to taking a walk with their neighbor. And then even when they don't feel like going out because it's so cold now in the morning, somebody's waiting for them. And that makes them more motivated to get out of bed and go meet their friend to take the walk.
And it has been the coldest winter here in 15 years. So
wow.
It's we've had these really, really chilly mornings for at least a week now. All right, Dr. Mazes, we will look for your work, not only your books, but we'll follow you on X at Dr. Mazes. We'll check you out at the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Happy New Year, everyone, and may your new habits become full habits.
I hope so. Thank you very much. Dr. Mazes with us on the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition, the midway point of our program. Coming up next, our Fulbright scholar friend, Dr. Albrecht Clausen, is waiting in the wings right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. And Green Things, well, maybe the cold snap is momentarily over. After we were just talking with Dr. Victoria Mazes, and I was mentioning that this is the coldest coldest snap we've had in 15 years. You'd have to go back to that time when all the cactus died. It went down to 18 or 17 degrees. That was, I think in 2011 or 12. So it's been a really, really cold winter here, and unfortunately very dry. But Green Things, the weather looks great for this weekend, so good time to go by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River there. Their website's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com, and they're now featuring beautiful fountains for your garden at Zocalo Village. Family-owned and operated since 1970. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, it's always a pleasure to welcome back to our program Dr. Albrecht Clausen, a renowned scholar of medieval history, someone that I like to say fits the bill for the true Renaissance man. Dr. Clausen is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He's now the director of undergraduate studies in his department. He's published over 130 scholarly books and hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry, four volumes of essays and textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won many honors, including, this is my favorite, the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions, in recognition of his outstanding services to German studies. Dr. Clausen is the editor-in-chief of the international online journal Humanities. His most recent book is actually in the poetry realm. It's titled Haikus from the Desert to the Tropics, Poetic Miracles. And his other most recent book, Nature in the Middle Ages and Early Modern Times, and still to come, Miracles and Wonders of the Middle Ages. Dr. Clausen is a Fulbright scholar. He utilized that wonderful title and some of the compensation that went with it by spending a semester in Cairo in 2022. Professor, great to see you.
Bill, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It's been a couple of months since we saw you. I hope you had a great holiday. I know you were in New Orleans where that tragic event unfolded with the gentleman. That's probably not the right term to call him a gentleman, but the person who in his vehicle went around the barricades and then plowed into folks who were celebrating the new year.
And we have had the very same incidents in Magdeburg in Germany.
Germany, right?
Right. And we have had the same thing in Nice in southern France a couple of years ago. And it will happen again because this seems to be a very convenient way of killing people, large number. There's something really mentally wrong, I'm afraid, in our world. I cannot quite pinpoint it, but we are deeply concerned. And as I said before, then everyone sheds crocodile tears.
Well, people don't know how to react to these things, so they typically will say on social media, our prayers go to to a particular city or what's going on in Southern California with the fires.
Yes.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it really begins with the individual trying to do something,
exactly,
and maybe not
yeah.
on a grand scale, yeah. Professor.
Well, let's say, you know, with guns. I'm not supporting guns. I don't own a gun, mm-hmm. and I'm not planning on getting a gun because I don't believe that I can achieve anything with that. When you own a gun, you think you just have your castle and you live in that castle and you become almost a hostile person because you know you have the power to kill another person and the laws and the police are behind you. So something is really wrong if you look at Scandinavian countries, Bhutan, Europe in general. They just don't have these guns. So there's something really wrong in our entire cultural makeup. I'm very deeply concerned. I understand we have the Second Amendment, and yet...
And many people do own weapons for their protection.
I understand that, yes, but at the same time, irresponsibility comes in and many, many dangers, and, you know, most guns get into the wrong hands, and then what do? And then we lament once again in our prayers, once again for all the children, and again and again and again. I think we already had 40,000 mass murders, death of mass murders this past year. So the bloodshed will simply keep going. I don't say.
Yeah, and we should point out that most of the gun deaths are from suicide in this country.
Well, so, we are facing an increasingly stress. If you, and I can talk about my own world, our students have to pay more and more tuition. That means they have to pay do more and more jobs. Mm-hmm. They have to balance out their jobs with their studies, family obligations. And so they get into stress. And the more stress there is, the less they can really focus on what is important. And that's, let's say, in that case, their studies. Again, there are deep problems, but we have talked about that. It's money. It's money that rules all these things. Whether you think about the gun industry, they make money. The more mass murders there are, the more people getting afraid and buy then weapons. There is a vicious cycle, or not even a cycle. It's a spiral that gets out of, or is already out of hand.
And you had an interesting meeting at the university last night. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there is a group, a Baha'i group, that meets once every Tuesday.
That follow the Baha'i religion.
Yeah, that's right. And Baha'is are the most peaceful group in the entire world. Mm-hmm. They have, for example, their main headquarters in Haifa in Israel, and that's the only place in Israel where really the various religions come together, and there is no hostility. But anyway, this is a small group, and we discuss then through the lens of the Baha'i. I'm not a member of the Baha'i, but issues such as last night, what makes a good person? What is a good friend? What can we do on a very... And we had a very interesting consensus because we all realized it is important to keep the large picture in mind, but all we really can do is to work with your colleagues, with your family members, your friends, your neighbors. Only there do you have sort of on the microscopic level, do you have really a chance of having an impact on improving this world. I mean, that's all we need to do. And frankly, when I leave this world, I want to leave behind a footprint, thank you, of having been a good person as much as I can. Mm-hmm. We need to have some footprints, but positive footprints.
I grew up in a community north of Chicago, Wilmette, Illinois, a professor that actually has an incredible structure. A Baha'i temple is nice. in the hometown where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And if folks are ever in the Chicago area and they take that drive north of the city along Lake Michigan, you can't miss it. It's a beautiful structure, the Baha'i Temple in Wilmette, Illinois. So let's take the break here. And I want to come back and I want to talk to you a little bit about this new book, Miracles in the Middle Ages. We're going to take a break. It's the Buckmaster Show with Dr. Claussen is with us. Albrecht Claussen from the University of Arizona. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the Greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Send a lot of our listeners over to a beautiful area of New Mexico, the land of enchantment. That's Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Not a bad drive at all, about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now for your enchanting weekend over in Silver City. Visit southwestnewmexico.org, and there's all the information you need for your trip. I hope you do that trip over to Silver City. And again, it's only about 3 hours east of the Tucson area. We continue now in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, renowned scholar of medieval history. He's a Fulbright scholar. He's at the University of Arizona, where he is a distinguished professor of German studies, and he has a new responsibility, director of undergraduate studies in his department. I want to talk a little bit about, you were talking about the Baha'i religion. I wonder if, do you believe there might be a common thread to all religions or most of them in the world?
Well, I would say definitely the Western religions, the three Abrahamic faiths, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. They all claim in one way or the other that they build on a love and that they want to build communities. There are, of course, different interpretations here and there, but ultimately, if you think about Hinduism, if you think about Buddhism as well, they commonly argue that the purpose of us people here on this earth is to love or to find love or to aim for love. And that's really what the humanities ultimately are working on. If you think about Dante, the famous Divine Comedy, what takes this human being through inferno, hell, purgatory, and then paradiso, paradise? That is his love, the longing for Beatrice. And Beatrice then can take her lover to God, and then there's another guide who takes him then directly to God. So love as an engine that drives us through life. I mean, in all my personal relationships, with friends, it's all a form of love. It's an energy that allows us to rise above our own self, our selfishness, our pride, our greed, our violence, our aggressions. Ultimately, we need to learn to overcome this basic human creature in us and aspire for some higher values. So I think, you know, people sometimes question the value of the humanities as an academic discipline. And I argue just the very opposite. That is the foundation.
Now you hear people say, who needs humanities exactly. anymore? The word humanities, human, of course, just jumps out at you. Is love a foundation of the humanities?
In many different ways because...
How so?
Because most texts we're dealing with, artwork even, movies even, and also music, just all filled with topics on love, on the way how people interact with each other. I mean, look, you can have the most money of the world. Let's say famous Elon Musk, who is the richest man on the earth. Is he happy? I don't know. When I'm hungry and I get a slice of bread, I am happy. Mm-hmm. You don't need that much. I need my wife, I need my friends, I need these things. They make me my life reasonable. And that's what the humanities are really probing, setting students on their path, finding themselves, and thereby becoming adults who understand the obligations, pain, and joy of love.
Some universities feel the humanities are no longer needed and have dropped them, but humanities go back to kind of the real building blocks of the university system in this country and maybe in the world.
Yeah. Absolutely. But there's a very strange thing. We have gotten really traumatic messages from various universities where they indeed closed down the humanities, let's say University of West Virginia. And we all thought, oh my goodness, that's a fight against the humanities. Mm. And I learned only recently, not at all. There were so many internal strifes and conflicts. The entire college could not really operate. And so the administration decided we have to shut that down altogether to rebuild maybe. I mean, it was catastrophic in many different ways. Bennington College, very famous.
Vermont, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. And we only learned later, no, the deans had no alternative. There was so much hatred.
So this was internal bickering and fighting.
Exactly, yeah.
And it wasn't so much about what humanity stood for.
That's right. Yeah. Because, you know, in teachings, in general, I notice that if you are a good teacher, and lots of us are teachers, I mean, you are a teacher and engineers can be teachers and so forth. The interaction, the way how you interact with people, if they realize that you care for them and that you listen to them, that was another major point we addressed yesterday, that in all human communications, the ability to listen is one of the crucial components that allows love to flourish. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the major key things in my marriage, and I've been married now more than 40 years with Carolyn, and one of the key things that I have learned, frankly, is to listen, just to listen, because there's energy on the other side, there's sometimes aggression, frustration, and that needs to be let go, and I listen, and thereby I become the vessel of her love, because I am there for her. And this can be the same thing amongst friends who need to support each other. We all need support.
And people don't, generally a lot of people don't listen. They're thinking about, what am I going to say next? Yeah, what's my role in this conversation rather than bouncing off what they're hearing, right?
Yeah. And you, I make a gesture which the listeners cannot see, but I take my two fingers and, you know, tap, 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 tap.
Yeah.
That's the little video game machine, whatever. And that is sort of the huge danger we are very worried about, that the mechanization of our world, the robotization of our world isolates, atomizes us. That was another point we discussed. What is a good person? A good person is somebody who accepts that there are other people around. And I like, for example, the random acts of kindness that makes my life so beautiful, mm-hmm. when I can just simply be nice to a total stranger.
And maybe pick up their tab at the restaurant or something.
Holding open the door.
Okay.
Saying, hello, how are you? Mm-hmm. Sitting somewhere and just asking where he or she is going, wishing a good, I mean, very simple mm-hmm. things. Picking up a tab, that's a big thing, of course, mm-hmm. but it can be endless things. Kindness. The acknowledgement that there's a human being next to you. That's what we really do. And, you know, this is something we also missing out as much as we do good things in the humanities, but we do not, or no one's really offering courses on basic ethics. Mm-hmm. You know, principles of what is honor, what is your dignity as a human being. I think that really would be so important to bring us back to a set of values that our modern societies all over the world, they are losing it. Mm-hmm. They only think about money, profit, which is important, mm-hmm. yeah, but without those values, then we're becoming cogs in the wheel and we're losing ourselves.
Speaking with Dr. Albrecht Clausen, his new book will be Miracles and Wonders in the Middle Ages. Give us an example of a miracle in the Middle Ages.
The global answer would be, and we just talked about it, and that life itself is a miracle. The mm-hmm. fact that we live, I mean, we are surrounded by, I think, 4 hectabillion, I don't know the yeah. number, I know, trillion, then the next level. So many viruses and bacteria. How do we survive? Mm-hmm. Because there is a miracle. Some force, I don't want to talk about religion, but some force allows us to live. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. And secondly, let's say many individuals in the last 50 years have been announced as saints by the Pope after extensive medical research. People who prayed at those grave sites were miraculously healed. Most mm-hmm. famously, Father Damien, the saint who helped the lepers in Molokai in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And there were miracle healings. And the doctor said, we don't know. Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? I would like to say it comes from love.
Mm-hmm.
The person who loves another person. Love is a power that creates an incredible force field which suddenly allows you to transform. So we have countless examples of miracles, even today.
Mm. Tom, do we have a caller here? Oh, we do not. Okay. All right. So, miracles and wonders, what's the difference between a wonder and a miracle?
Very easy to say.
Okay.
A wonder is a phenomenon in nature, which we clearly observe, but it's a natural wonder, but we cannot quite explain it, but it's physical. Mm-hmm. Miracle is something where a phenomenon where divine power comes in, defying all natural laws, and creating a transformation.
Mm-hmm.
So those have much to do with faith, and no one can convince anyone else about miracles. That's an individual choice, whether you want to believe in it or not. It has nothing to do with scientific facts or medical facts, but certain things that just happen in our lives. And let's say we also addressed love. The fact itself that you fall in love with another person. Mm-hmm. Why would you love another person mm-hmm. when your own material instinct is to be greedy and by yourself? But the experience of love is something that transforms you. That's a miracle
that,
by itself.
You know, that whole thing fascinates me, that chemistry deal.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about the,
what is
the attraction,
exactly.
right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is the attraction to another person that would have someone fall in love.
Yeah. And the other point is, you know, you drive every day from your home here. Mm-hmm. I drive here and there mm-hmm. and sometimes long distances. And we are surrounded by millions of other drivers. And it's a highly dangerous thing.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. In this town especially. Yeah.
It's very dangerous. And I feel often, and I say then, thank you for this miracle
that I'm surviving.
Exactly. And this drag racing, basically.
Exactly.
You know, this amazing But at the same time, if I may add, yes, it's a crazy city a little bit, but I often have miraculous experiences. I need to turn left into, against the traffic. Mm-hmm. And my wife always says, you will never be able to do it. I turn down, pull down the window, make some gestures, please, please, please.
And they let you in.
And they let me in.
There's a miracle. All right. Professor Klassen, always a pleasure. Thank you very
much. Thank you so much,
Bill. On behalf of the professor and Tom on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.